Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bova Metzia Daf Lamed Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 14 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Aleph. On the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei, our topic heading in the margin, we've written the following. Stira, there appears to be a contradiction between Reisha L'Seifa, between the opening and the latter part of the Mishnah, B'mikre Shechad L'Reusa. We already, in our previous shiur, spent time introducing this section of Gemara. What happens if you have only one negative feature, characteristic of the cow that you find? When we speak of one negative characteristic, in accordance with what we explained in our previous shiur, we had a cow found running amongst vines. That, the Mishnah described, is a lost animal. Why? Because there were two negative characteristics. It's running as opposed to grazing, and amongst vines as opposed to being on the road. What happens if I only have one negative characteristic? Our note continues, in Nechshav Aveda, is that considered also a lost animal? Kagon Rotza Vaderech, for example. Action-wise, it's doing something that's unusual, uncharacteristic of an owned animal that's there with the owner's will. Why? It's running. That's unusual. That would indicate loss. However, baderech, it's running along the road. The road, along the road, is normal for animals that are under their owner's supervision and awareness. So you have one negative characteristic there. Alternatively, roya bein hakromim, or an animal that's not running, it's grazing at ease, but in a location that's negative, amongst vines, that's not the place that you would expect a cow to be grazing. So our question once again is, what happens halachically? What obligations are there if there is only one negative characteristic? On the side of our Gemara, on the margin, you'll see there's a starred note, and it basically in an outline form presents the variables that will be featured in the Gemara. So if we just take note of our comment on the side by the star, the first is headed Legreusa, negative features. Ritza, running. What's negative about an animal running? Misrachekis Yoser, it's creating greater distance between where it lives, where it's owned, and where it is now. Miscalculus, it also can get hurt that way. Kerem, a vineyard, is a negative situation. Nechbelis alidei sritos, the animal gets scratched grazing amongst vines. The positive characteristics that would indicate an animal is not in a lost state. One, halicha, it's merely walking as opposed to running or grazing. Number two, derech, along a road as opposed to in a vineyard. Now the Gemara. Motza, chamor, upora, and it went in the Mishnah to say, royen, baderech, if it's grazing along a road, ain zu aveda, that is not an aveda. However, rotza ben akromim, running amongst vines, hare zu aveda. And the Gemara presents the question. we note that it's a long question. Hogufakashia, the Mishnah is inherently contradictory. Amris, you said on the one hand, Motsu Hamoru Poro Royin Baderach Ein Zu Aveda. If you find a donkey or a cow grazing along the road, that is not an Aveda. Royin Baderach Hu Delo Havi Aveda. Where it's grazing along the road, you have two positive characteristics, action wise and location wise. So the Mishnah declares that's not an Aveda. You could infer from that, however, ha, rotza baderech, or veroya bein akromim. If it's running along the road, action wise, that's negative. Location wise, okay. Here, or roe, action wise, that's okay, bein akromim, but location wise, that's negative. So if you have one negative characteristic, you could have inferred from the resha of the Mishnah, havi aveda. That would constitute an animal in a state of loss. Ema seifa. Well, just continue reading the Mishnah and let's see what we come out with. Chamor v'kelef hafuchim uforo rotza bein akromim harezu aveda. To see a donkey with inverted vessels, inverted accoutrements, like an inverted saddle, or a cow that's running amongst vines, that is an aveda. And we see in the Mishnah, rotza bein akromim hu davi aveda. You have two negative characteristics. Action-wise, it's running. Location-wise, amongst the vines, that would be an aveda. Two negative characteristics. Ha rotza badera v'roya bein akromim. However, if it were running, that's a negative action, but baderach in an acceptable location, or veroya, positive action, but bein akromim, negative location, ein zu aveda. There's only one negative characteristic in those examples. So that would not be an aveda. Now if you compare the conclusions from the resha and seifa, you see a contradiction. To try to keep things simple, notice the dashed underline four lines up where we said havi aveda. That was in the case of you have one negative characteristic, it is an aveda. Here we have dashed underline ein zu aveda. One negative characteristic, it's not an aveda. So then you've got a contradiction on your hands. To resolve this, we have diamonds around Abaye and later on the fourth wide line, Rava. On the side of the Gemara, we indicate that the diamonds introduce Chuvos Abaye v'Rava liyashev stira hanal, answers offered by Abaye and Rava to resolve the above mentioned contradiction. So now the Gemara, Omar Abaye yagid olav reo. Technically speaking, that's a posuk in the book of Eov. However, it's used as part of rabbinic license, meaning let one describe the other. What does that mean? Let's apply that. Tana, the Tana teaches Roya Baderech, it's grazing along the road, the Lo Havi Aveda. Vehu Hadin L'Roya Bein Akromim. And the same would apply if it's grazing amongst the vines. According to Abaye, the action is what determines matters. So that if the action is acceptable, when I say acceptable, it means it does not indicate loss. The animal is not lost if it's roya wherever it may be. Likewise, Tana rotza bein akromim. The Tana teaches running amongst vines. Again, we emphasize action according to Abaye. Running is negative. Rotza bein akromim tahavi aveda. That is an aveda. And here you see Yagid of Reya, we mentioned before, let one teach about the other, and the same applies to Rotza Baderech, if it's running along the road. Omar Le Abaye, Rava addresses Abaye. Abaye, who just said everything is dependent on the action. Rava says, "I yagid ov reo." If the Mishnah is to be understood in that fashion, let the case stated in the Mishnah as what constitutes an aveda based on action. Teach me about the other case. If that's if our Mishnah is to be approached in that fashion, Yagin Olav Reyo, then it would have been preferable to have in the Mishnah the following. Listen, Kilsa, let the Mishnah teach the easier, the less severe situation, the Kol Shekein Chamirta, and we would have extended that information to the more severe case. And now Rava explains. Listen, the Mishnah should have taught Rotza Baderech Dahavi Aveda. The Mishnah should have taught where you have one negative characteristic, namely Rotza Baderech, and tell me that is an Aveda. The Kol Shekein Rotza Bein Akromim, and all the more so if not only the action is negative, is indicative of loss, but location as well. Certainly that would be an Aveda. There you have two negative features. The Mishnah didn't do that, though. The Mishnah didn't teach Rotza Baderech as the case of Aveda. It taught the case of Rotza Bein Akromim. Likewise, on the other end, V'listni Roya Bein Akromim Delo Havi Aveda. The Mishnah, in trying to describe what is not an Aveda, teach me, again, by way of Abaye's mindset, Rava speaks, where the emphasis is on action, so teach me one positive characteristic vis-a-vis action. It's grazing in a negative place in the vineyards. The lo havi Aveda, because of the action of grazing, it's not considered an Aveda. And all the more so if it's Roa Baderech, where you have two positive characteristics indicating it's not an Aveda. And yet, in trying to teach me that something is not an Aveda, the Mishnah didn't do that. It didn't teach me the Kal case, Roya Ben Akromim. And on my own, I would have concluded that Roya Baderech is certainly not an Aveda. So Rava finds fault in Abaye's understanding of the Mishnah by virtue of the examples that the Mishnah itself chooses to teach. Elo Omar Rava. So Rava comes up with his approach to the Mishnah, to the contradiction that the inferences had suggested. Let's continue now with Rava's approach. Rotza, arotza, lo kashya. As far as contradictions regarding the rotza situations, the running situations where we inferred from the ratio that running situation would result in it being an aveda, and the seifa, a running situation, would not be an aveda. There's no contradiction. Ha de apo legabi dabra, ha de apo legabi masa. The Rabbeinu Chananel across from here says that if it's running uponeah and it's facing, it's running in the direction of the dabra or the fields, that's an aveda, and you'd have to intervene and return it to the owner. If, however, you see it running toward to the settled area, toward the community, then it's not an aveda. Roya aroya nami lo kashya. As far as the seeming contradiction regarding the roe situation, the grazing situation, there's no contradiction. Kan bavedas gufa, kan bavedas karka. And we go on the next few lines and explain that. First, we translate. It depends. If it's a question of avedas gufa, the animal itself suffering a loss, versus the field suffering a loss. And we explain. Ki kotani roya baderech lo havi aveda, where the Mishnah had taught grazing along the road is not an aveda. That was what the Mishnah actually taught. And we inferred. Ha roya ben akromim havio aveda. Grazing amongst vines is an aveda. What's an aveda? Bavedas karka. That's in order to prevent the owner of the vineyard from loss, having a cow crushing his vines. So you have to intervene to preserve the karka. So when the Mishnah taught Roya Baderech is not an Aveda, and it left room to infer that Roya Bakromim is an Aveda, the Aveda in question was the land, the vines that would be suffering a loss. And for that reason, you have to remove the cow from over there. The Chikotoni, and the Mishnah that taught Rotza Bein HaKromim Havya Aveda, the Mishnah actually taught this. This was actually in the Mishnah, running amongst the vines. That is an Aveda. And then you would infer, Haroya Bein HaKromim Lo Havya Aveda, grazing amongst the vines is not an Aveda. Notice the double underline here, and two lines, and the line before, two of the same cases, Roya Bein HaKromim, and inferring from Rotza Bein HaKromim that Roya Bein HaKromim is not an Aveda, when just a moment before we said Roya Bein HaKromim is an Aveda. Well, Roya Bein HaKromim is not an Aveda, Bavedas Gufa, with regard to the animal itself. The animal is leisurely grazing amongst the vines. There is no loss bodily to the animal. And the Gemara explains, the Rotza Bein HaKromim, if it were running amongst the vines, and we said that was the case the Mishnah taught, that's an Aveda, that's the Miskiva, means the animal, Miskiva, the animal suffers scratches. The Roya Bein HaKromim, lo Miskiva, but grazing amongst the vines, there is no scratching that the animal will suffer. The Gemara asks, based on what we just said, that Roya Bein HaKromim is not an Aveda because the animal is not suffering any bodily injury. The Roya Bein HaKromim Nehi Dolo Miskiva, granted that it's not suffering a scratch, and you might have concluded, therefore, you don't have to remove the animal. Tepo claim Yishum Aveda's Karka. How can you should still learn out that there is an Aveda problem because of land loss. How can you teach what we did two lines ago, that Roya Bein HaKromim is not an Aveda? What do you mean it's not an Aveda? Granted, bodily speaking, it's not an Aveda, but what about the vines? The Gemara answers Bidikusi. The it's not an Aveda as far as the ground is concerned, because the owner of those vines is a Kusi. He's a heathen. And we don't have to concern ourselves with property loss suffered by heathens, by idol worshippers, and the like. Fetepokle Mishum Avedas Gufa de Dilma Katula. Should you not conclude, though, that even though it's only grazing, and there is no property loss concern, but there still is a bodily loss consideration. Granted, it's not scratching, but Dilma Katla, the Kusi might take out his shotgun and kill the animal that's grazing amongst his vines. The Gemara says, no, that's not a concern, because Ba'asra, we are here in the Mishnah referring to a Asra, a location, the Masru Vahadakatli. First warnings are issued, and then people will take action and kill it. Well, Vidilma Asruba, well, maybe the animal that you see grazing amongst the Kusi's vines is an animal whose owner already was served a warning. The Gemara says, well, Asruba, if the owner was already served a warning, Velo Ihadruba, that's the gears on the side, or Velo Izdaruba, and they weren't careful, they didn't remove the animal, then Vadai Aveda Midasi, then as far as we're concerned, it's as if the owner himself is destroying the animal, is throwing away the animal. And therefore, I don't have to be concerned. So if we just go over the last general point that was made, focusing on our markings in the case of Roya Ben Akromim, is Roya Ben Akromim reason for saying it's an Aveda or not? Well, Roya Ben Akromim is an Aveda vis-a-vis vines owned by a Jew. So in that respect, we would call it an Aveda. Roya Ben Akromim is not an Aveda with regard to the body of the animal. However, we raised the issue in the Gemara, granted that the body of the animal is not a concern because it's only leisurely grazing there, but isn't it nevertheless still an Aveda by virtue of the fact he's ruining the vines? So we answered, no, that's the case that we say Roya Ben Akromim is not an Aveda, and hence there's no reason to remove it, is because it was leisurely grazing amongst vines owned by a Kusi. So leisurely grazing amongst vines, if it's a Jewish-owned vineyard, it's an Aveda on the grounds, and the pun is intended here, on the grounds of Aveda's Karka. If you're going to say, as we inferred, that Roya Ben Akromim is not an Aveda, that is a case where it's leisurely grazing amongst vines owned by a heathen. Then you have no reason to get involved. We continue in the Gemara. Hichzira ubarcha. The Mishnah described a person who returned the animal and it escaped again, and that repeated itself several times. The obligation of returning the animal is constant. It remains. And it said, Shenemar, Hoshev, Tishivein. The Pasuk used a double expression. As we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice that we have a triangle marking. And on the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, also indicate that this continues till Amud Beis. This series marking, which highlights Sidra Shel Droshes B'Kfilus Lashon. We're going to have a series of Droshes of Psukim from all over the Torah where a double expression appears. What am I to learn from that double expression? V'Gemara. Omar Le'ahu M'Drabonan L'Rova. So one of the scholars addressed Rava and suggested, Ema Hashev Chadazimna Tishivein Trezimni. The double expression in the Pasuk regarding returning a lost item indicates two times. If the animal escaped a third time, you don't have to get involved. Amale Rava responded, Hashev, that word on its own implies Afilu Mea Pome Mashma. That there's no limitation in terms of number of attempts in the word Hashev. So if Hashev accounts for the multiple returns to Shivaim, what am I to learn from that? Ein li ela lebeso. The idea of returning a lost item would be, had I not had the word Tishivaim, I would have thought only if you return it to the owner's house. Luginaso ulechubaso minayin. What about returning the lost item to the owner's garden or to his churba? He owns a ruin, and you place the lost article in his ruin. That would also be called return, and from that point on, you're exempt. Whatever happens to the returned item is not your responsibility anymore. How do I know that return includes dina and churba and not limited to house? Talmud lomar tishivei mikomakom. Any kind of return. Now, we analyze in terms of practicality. Hey Chidami, what are the circumstances of the Ginon Churba? If they are places in which the item would be protected, literally guarded, protected, pshita, then even without teshivim, I would know that that's considered a proper return. E delo mintura amai, and if it's exposed to loss in those locations, then why would you be exempt by placing it in the owner's hina or churba? The Gemara continues, the oilum de mintura. In fact, they are guarded places. The ha kamash malon. What the drosha tells us is the lo bo'ino das bailim. You don't need to have the owner's awareness at the point that I am returning it. Rebbe Lozer, in accordance with Rebbe Lozer's teaching, the Omar who says, Hakel tzrichin das bailim, in all cases of return, for example, a thief who wants to return his theft, you need to have the owner's awareness. So it's Hakol tzrichin das bailim, Chutz me'ashovas aveda, with the exception of the return of a lost article. Shatura ripso hashovas harbe. The Torah, by adding the word tishivim, says all kinds of form of return are acceptable. When we say all kinds of return, of course, provided that the location is one that is secure. Beyond that, though, awareness of the owner is not necessary. Once again, in the case of returning a lost article. We now see another place in the Torah where a double expression appears. This is with regard to Shiluach HaKein. Shiluach HaKein is the mitzvah where, upon encountering a bird sitting upon eggs, incubating eggs, or tending to its young, if you want to use the eggs, you want to use it for your own purposes or take the young for yourself, you're obligated to send away the mother bird. Shaleach tishalach. Emo. Now, maybe we should add, by way of background, that you have to send away the mother bird before you can take the eggs. Let us say you sent her away and before you took them, she fluttered back. And this repeated itself many times. By the fact that you sent away the mother initially, that doesn't give you a right to take the eggs if she comes back. So, shalech to shalach is the, we say from here we learn that you have to send her away even if it's many times before you can take the eggs. The Gemara asks, Emo shalach hadazimna, tishalach trezimni, that it's necessary to send her away twice. Shaleach once, tishalach twice, and if after sending her away twice she returned, you can take the eggs even if the mother is there sitting on top of them. So we answer, Omale, shalach. The word shalach itself, afilu mea pomim mashma. Even 100 times, you've got to send her away and make sure she is away before you take the eggs. If she returns even 100 times in the interim before you took them, you cannot take the eggs. That I learned from shalach. Tishalach ein li elo l'dvar rishus. The obligation to send away the mother without the word tishalach, I would have thought that applies only when you're taking the eggs for your own personal needs. Lidvar mitzvah minayin. Let us say you need you need the bird for a mitzvah. Rashi says, Lidvar mitzvah minayin hayotzorach l'tayar bo as hametzora. Minayin she'osir be'em al habonim. Tamalomar tishalach. Let us say you need the bird for a mitzvah purposes, like taras mitzora, in the purification process of someone who experienced tzaras, a bird is necessary. Again, without getting into the details, how it's done, how it's used, but you need a bird. From where do I know that you cannot take a bird while it's sitting incubating its eggs? From where do I know that you have to, that you cannot justify taking the bird while on the eggs by saying, well, I need it for a mitzvah? Tamar lomar tishalach mikol makom. And even in a case like that, you have no right to take the bird while it's incubating its eggs. Omar le'ahu midrabbonan l'rava. This is a discussion coming off the double expression hoicheach toicheach es amisecha. The pasuk speaks of reprimanding a wrongdoer, chastising a sinner. Hoicheach toicheach, offer reproach, chastisement to your sinful friend. Now there's a double expression, hocheach tochiach. So once again, by way of background, we know that number of times is a non-consideration. You have to constantly reprimand an individual, try to stop him from committing a sin many, many times. Omar le'ahu mirabonon l'rova v'yema hocheach hadozimno tochiach trezimni. Maybe the obligation of reprimanding is only two times, but beyond that, you can ignore his behavior. Omar le, Rava answers, Hocheach vilu mea pomim mashma. The word hocheach itself is a word indicating no time limit, even 100 times. Tochiach, what's the role of that word? So, Ein li ela harav l'tamid. Had I had just hocheach, I would have thought that is when the reprimanding is coming from the master, the teacher, the rabbi, instructing his student. Talmid l'rav minayin. How about a case where a student notices wrongful behavior on the part of his teacher, his rabbi? From where do I know that the student must speak up? Of course, within the realm of dignity, there's proper etiquette and behavior that's expected, but to remain silent in the face of wrongdoing, even a student must speak up. How do I know that? Tamud lomar hocheach tochiach mikol makom. The extra word tochiach says chastisement is mandatory, is required under all circumstances. The next pasuk and double expression deals with the mitzvah of prika, of lightening the burden from an animal that's crouching down under an oversized load. The pasuk says, "Azov ta'azov imo, ein li ela ba'lav imo." From the pasuk as it appears, I would think that you're obligated to relieve the animal that's burdened only if the owner is there as well. Shein balavimo minayin, in the case that the owner is not present, how do I know that if you see an animal suffering under a heavy load, you are to lighten its burden? Talmud lomar azov ta'azov mikol makom. The double expression tells me that even when you don't have the owner present, you should intervene on behalf of the animal. The next pasuk, hokem tokim imo. This has to do with the mitzvah of ta'ina, of loading up an animal whose burden is in the meantime cast on the ground. Ein li'ela balavimo. From the simple reading of the pasuk hakem tokimimo, I would think that mitzvah is limited to where the owner is present, where the owner is participating, he's there and he's helping out. Shein balavimo minayin. If the owner is not there, from where do I know that you still have an obligation to load up the animal? Talmud lomar hakem tokim mikol makom. The double expression communicates that idea. We have a bracketed section. You'll notice that this bracketed section continues till the second line from the top of Omid Beis. We have a starred note, and let's read the note together. Achrei Sograyim, after the bracketed section, Hagemara Mamshicha LeDrosh Psukim Shatfilus Lashon. The Gemara will continue its exposition of psukim, of verses that have double expressions. So, as we often recommend in Gemara markings, why not just do that now? Overview, scan ahead. Do you see a continuation of the triangle marking on Omid Beis? And of course you do. And all of those are double expression verses. Our note continues, Besocha Sograyim, within the bracketed section, the Gemara Dona B'Sheila, the Gemara will deal with the following question, Le'ezet Tzorach Kosva Tera Mitzvahs Prika Te'ino V'Hashavas Aveda. Why was it necessary for the Torah, what benefit do I gain by the Torah specifying the obligation to lighten an animal's load, load up an animal whose load is cast on the ground, and returning lost articles? Shekulam be'etzem inyan echad. In technically speaking, they're all the same idea. Vayinu atzalos momen chavero, preservation of your friend's property. Why the necessity of specifying each mitzvah separately? As we look into our Gemara text, the bracketed section, I think that at this point the general structure of the Gemara is fairly clear. The triangle series continues later on with the additional examples of double psukim, double expressions. Within the brackets, we also happen to have a nosei slash mivne, a topic heading with structural note on the side, indicating that this heading is for the Gemara within Tocha Sograyim. You see a house form highlighting the expression lomale. Birur, I'm reading again the note on the side of the Gemara in the margin. Birur lama hayat sarech latero lichtev mispar mitzvahs. Why was it necessary for the Torah to write several mitzvahs? Prika, tina, vashavas aveda, shelikulam, rayon, mishutaf. They all have the same idea behind them. Vahinu, hatzolos momen chavero. Would it not have been enough for the Torah just to write one of them, and I would have been able to figure out the rest? Now, the Gemara. Within the brackets. Why did the Torah have to write each mitzvah? Prika, again, is unloading an animal that's overburdened, and Tina's loading up a load that's strewn on the floor that needs to be loaded up on the animal, this beast of burden. Trifi, I need the mitzvahs to be specified. The Ikos of Rahmana Prika, had the Torah written only Prika, Havayamino, I would have thought, well, that kind of mitzvah, that action, you have to do. You have to lighten the load of an overburdened animal. Because the animal is suffering by the overload. And you have a loss, a financial loss, through the animal becoming weakened, becoming injured or ruined by the overburden. Avol te'ina. But as far as loading up an animal, again with a proper load, the lav tzar balei chayim ika, there's no consideration of preventing animal suffering. For lo chisaron kisika, there's no issue of financial loss there. That's why we added that you're loading up the animal with a proper size, proper weight burden. There's no issue of chisaron kis, of any loss in value of the animal. Hey, Molo, I would have thought that under circumstances like that, that you're not obligated to load up the animal. V'yashmin te'ina, and had the Torah taught me just the mitzvah of te'ina. Mishum de'vishar, there you're obligated to do it because you're going to get paid for it. That point is reviewed along the sugya a couple of times, and we'll actually see alternative opinions to what we just said. But in the meantime, we're working with this idea that loading up an animal results in you're getting paid for it. Oh, you're getting compensation for that, so you have to do it. Aval priko de bechinam, but unloading an overburdened animal, for which you don't get paid, emolo, maybe there's no obligation. Tzricha, therefore, the Torah should tell you that you must do priko as well. Question. According to Rabbi Shimon, that says even for loading up an animal, I don't know if you can say uploading the animal, but for loading up the animal, you must do so and do so gratis. So, what is there to say? Meaning, let the Torah write just te'ina, you have to do that, and priko, I would figure out on my own. Why does the Torah spell it out? The Rabbi Shimon lo misai mikroi. As far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, when he looks at the two psukim, one dealing with, the two separate psukim in the Torah, when you look at the text of those psukim in Rabbi Shimon's eyes, neither pasuk can be clearly understood as referring to a specific action of either prika or te'ina. Rashi, toward the end of the Rashi commentary, lo misai mikroi, hey mash matina ve hey mash prika. Which pasuk indicates te'ina? Which pasuk indicates prika? The ikas of Chada, had the Torah written just one verse, have amino, I would have thought the frika also that pasuk is teaching me to do prika, to unload, to lighten the load of an overburdened animal. Avaltino lo, had I had just one pasuk, I would not have known. There's any mitzvah teina kos rachmona itach latino. Therefore, the second pasuk is written for me to derive that te'ina is also a mitzvah. So as far as Reb Shimon is concerned, there is an absolute necessity in having both psukim, because had I had just one pasuk, I wouldn't have known that there is a mitzvah of te'ina. Lomo li lemichtav hani tarti, v'lomo li lemichtav aveda. Why is it necessary for the Torah to write these two mitzvahs, prikotina, and in addition to write aveda? Rashi says, "Lama li lemichtav aveda, hashavas aveda, the return of a lost article." Lichtav oy ha oy ha. Let the Torah write one of these. Veligmar minei, and learn from it. The ha kulu azharos moman Yisrael hu. These are all Torah's exhortation for me to concern myself with another Jew's property. So once the Torah exhorts me to concern myself, to take action to preserve my friend's property, all the rest would follow suit. Srichi, the Gemara says, no, I need to spell out each one. The Ikos of Rachmona Hani Tarti, had the Torah spelled out Prika and Tina, and not the mitzvah Shomas Aveda. Mishum, because in that case, in Prika Tina, you have these elements, the Tzara Demora Isa, you have the discomfort of the owner. You've got here, the owner there is standing, he can't load up his animal by himself. What's he going to do? So you have the Tzara of the owner just standing there helpless. And likewise with unloading the animal. And Tzara Dido Isa, you also have the Tzar of the animal. Aval Aveda, but with regard to a lost item, the Tzara Demora Isa, there's the pain of the owner in so far as that he doesn't have his item. However, Tzara Dido Lasa, if we're talking about a lost animal, the lost animal, it's not experiencing any pain. Emolo, maybe there's no obligation. Maybe where you have only tsara demora, you're not obligated to intervene. V'yashmin aveda, had the Torah written just aveda, mishum delesa lemora bahada, there the owner is not around. You found a wandering animal. The owner is not around to deal with it, to recover it. So you have to intervene. You have to take action. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Avohani tarti prika antina to isa lemora bahada. The owner is present. As far as the Torah verse itself is concerned, we saw these psukim earlier where the word emo appeared. So from the strict Torah perspective, those mitzvahs of prikantina, the owner is there. So emolo, I might have thought that you're not obligated to intervene. Rashi adds that I would have thought that it would have been sufficient for you to seek out others and have them hired to do the assistance. Tzricha, therefore, in addition to Hashavas Aveda, I have to spell out the mitzvah of Prika, the mitzvah Tina, to instruct the passerby that he must help along with the owner that is there. Regarding this Gemara, the top line that we already read, where it said, as far as these two mitzvahs, prikutina, I would have thought, had the Torah written just Hashavas Aveda, that regarding these mitzvahs, the mitzvah applies, I should say, the Torah describes the mitzvahs where the owner is there. So since the owner is there, I might have thought that I don't have to personally get involved. And as Rashi said, it would have been enough for me to go hire someone else. Tosfos asks, what do you mean when you say that these two mitzvahs, that they apply only when the owner is there? Did we not learn earlier that the double expression came to teach me, even if the owner is not there, you are still obligated? So Tosfos at the top, let's read it together. Valhani tarti de isnu the murayu bahadayu v'afal gav de marbino leo. Even though we included earlier, ain by lemimo, that you are obligated even in the absence of the owner's presence. Hainu, what do we mean ain by lemimo? Hainu she hu zokin echila, where the owner is elderly or he's infirmed. Granted, he's not there in the sense that he can't help, but he, the owner, can hire workers, and I would have thought that as a result of that, I'm not obligated to assist in prikartina. Therefore, the Torah spelled out these mitzvahs to tell me that you are obligated to assist. We continue in the Gemara. The double expression "mois yumas amaket." This is in the context of a person who murdered, and he is to be sentenced to death. The Torah says he shall be put to death. Ein li ela b'misag suvabo. I would have thought, if I wouldn't have had the double expression, that the execution of the murderer is only through sayef. Sayef is literally the sword or beheading. That's the Torah punishment for a murderer. Minayin shimiyata yochala misa b'misag suva boi. From where would I know that if you have circumstances that I can't carry out that form of execution? Rashi gives an example of the murderer's escaping is on a boat, and I can't. He's not in my arm's reach to behead him. However, I could shoot an arrow or I can sink the boat. Of course, if he's alone on the boat, I have that option. So how do I know that if you can't carry out the specific form of execution that the Torah deems for a murderer, Sha'ata Rashoy Lamisa B'chol Misa Sha'ata Yochol Lamiso, that you have a right to execute him in any way that you can do so? And we gave examples in the Rashi on the third line from the top. You can shoot him with an arrow or sink the boat. Talmud Lomar Mos Yumos Mikomakom. The double expression tells me that the proof that we have that latitude in execution. The next double expression comes from the topic in the Torah that deals with what we call an Ir Hanidachas. That's a community in which the population was seduced into idol worship. So they have a community of idol worshippers. The Torah speaks of their of the entire community being executed. And it says, Hakei sake, ein li ela b'hakoa k'suva b'hen. From the, if I didn't have a double expression, I would have thought that the execution of the members of the Ir HaNidachas is only through the Torah ordered form of execution, which is Sayef. Communal idol worship is punished by beheading, by the sword. By the way, that is in contrast with personal idol worship, that is punished by stoning. So the pasuk by Ir HaNidachas is necessary because without the double expression, I would have thought that the means, the form of execution is only through that which the Torah itself specifies. Minayin shim iya toyochla misan bako aksuva bohen shata rashoi lakaisen bako ako shata yochil. From where do I know that if for some reason you can't execute them through the sword, that you are allowed to execute them through any other means? Talmud lomar hakesake, the double expression, mikol makom. You are to execute them, however, whichever method. The next double expression deals with mashkon, the taking of collateral of a person that hasn't paid his debt. So the lender is entitled by virtue of the Torah to take a mashkon. It says, and regarding mashkon, the Torah expects that you are to return the collateral to the borrower during the time of day that he needs the item that you took as collateral. So the Gemara says, Hoshev Toshiv. That's the idea of returning the collateral for the lend for the borrower's use. Ein li ela shemishkenai birushus beisdin. I would know that this law applies only in the case where the court had ordered the borrower to provide a mashkon. Shelo birshus based in minayin, in a case where a collateral was taken under circumstances not involving a court order. How do I know that even under those circumstances you have to return it to the borrower during the time that he needs it? Talmud lomar hashev toshiv mikol makom. Whether it be a mashkon that you took through court intervention or otherwise, you must return it to the borrower who provides this collateral when he needs it. There's another pasuk dealing with a mashkon, and it says, Chavoil tachboil, ein li ela shemishkenoi birshus. I know the law regarding mashkon, that as we said before, you have to return it when he needs it. I would know that only if you took it birshus through, say, through court permission. Shelo birshus minayin, a mashkon taken even without court intervention, from where do I know that you have to return it when he needs it? Tamadomar chavol tachbo mikomako. Now, the pasuk is really quoted on the side. We should have read it maybe a moment or two earlier. Shmos perchav beis pasuk chavhei. It says there, im chavol tachbo el samas reacha, ad bo hashemesh teshivenu lo. We mentioned in our explanation that we're dealing with the need to return it to the borrower. But the obvious question now is, Havahani Trey Kroy Lomali, why do I need two psukim regarding the necessity of returning the mashkon to the borrower when he needs it? Answer, Chad Luxus Yom, V'chad Luxus Laila. One is relevant to a case where I took as a mashkon his daytime clothing, so that during the night I'm going to hold on to his clothing, which he doesn't need them at during the night. I'm going to hold on to them as collateral till he pays up the loan. But when day comes about, I have to give it back. And that will repeat itself each day until he pays back the loan. And the other pasuk is needed for Ksus Laila, for his pajamas that I may have taken, his nighttime clothing that I might have taken as a mashkon. So when night falls, make sure that you return it to the return his pajamas to the borrower, and you'll retake them in the morning as your mashkon. The pasuk that's now featured deals with tzedakah, the giving of charity. Pasoach tiftach, open your hands and give charity. Now, why the double expression? Ein li'ala l'ania ircha. I would have thought, had I not had a double expression, that your obligation is to the poor of your community. That I must provide charity even to the poor of another community. From where do I know that? Talmud Lomar, Posoach Tiftach. The double expression, Mikomakom. You must provide charity even to other communities. Noson Titein. Here's another posuk with regard to tzedakah, the giving of charity. Ein li'ela matona meruba. Had I had a pasuk without the double expression, I would have thought that if you can give a sizable amount, a respectable amount, meruba means a large amount, so then you are to give charity. Let us say, matana muetis minayin, let us say you're not a man of means and you don't have the ability to give a large gift of charity. You have a little to give, but even that you would be obligated to give. Tamalomar noson titein mikol makom. Give whatever you can afford. The next double expression comes from the topic of the grant that is given to a Jewish servant upon his departure from his servitude. It's called a ma'anak or ha'anoka, and the word appears in a double form. Ha'anek ta'anik. You must provide a grant to the servant, the Jewish servant, upon his departure from servitude. Well, ein li ela, had I not had a double expression, I would have thought that obligation applies. Eloshin is baruch habayis b'glolo manikim. Lon is baruch habayis b'glolo minayin. I would have thought that only if you had actual benefit from his servitude, that literally you had profit or increase in your house as a result of this Jewish servant's presence there, then you would provide a grant. What about loan is baruch habayis b'glolo? If he served you, but there was no increase in your house, in your profits, but as a result of his being there, minayin, how do I know that even then you have to provide a grant? Talmud lomar hanek ta'anik mikol makom. Whether you realize profit through his presence or not, you must provide a grant. The Gemara asks, Ula Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah diomar. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah disagrees with what we just said. He says, Nizbor habayis b'lo manikim lo. Lo nisborach habayis v'lo ein manikin. If you experience profit increase because of that servant, then you provide a grant upon his departure. If you didn't experience that increase, that profit through his tenure, then you're not obligated to provide the grant. Ta'anik lomali, the double expression, what do I learn from that? So as far as Rabbi Elazar ben Azar is concerned, Dibro Torah Kaloshen B'nei Adam. The Torah will at times speak in common speech form, Kaloshen B'nei Adam, as people speak. And people will oftentimes double their expressions without any unique point of law being derived from his doubling the expression. The next pasuk deals with the topic of charity, of tzedakah, another tzedakah-related pasuk. Ha'arveit ta'arvitenu. Ein li ela, had the pasuk not been doubled, I would have thought she'ein lo v'einai roitze lisparnes. If a person doesn't have any means of support, he doesn't have any personal funds, and he doesn't want to receive gifts. That's Eino Roitz L'Sparnes. He doesn't want to receive support through a gift. Omer Achmona, the Torah says, Tein Loi Derech Halva. Give him money in a loan form. Extend a loan to him. Later on, you can forgive the loan. But in the meantime, you have someone that isn't willing to take a gift, so present him support through what you present as a loan. Yeshlo v'eino rotzi l'sparnes minayin. What about a person that has his own funds? He has the means. Maybe he's an extreme miser. He has his own funds, but he doesn't want to accept, and he doesn't want to use his own funds for supporting himself. And he also doesn't want to accept outside funds. Rashi says, Yeshlo v'eino rotzi l'sparnes mishalo, ela mishalcha. He doesn't want to support himself from his own monies, and he doesn't want to. Here, l'sparnes means, Rashi clarifies, he doesn't want to support himself from his own money either. Minayin, from where do we know that you have to extend money to him for his own welfare? He's willing to take money from you. How do you know that you have to extend money to him? Rashi adds what that which is of key importance, and that you will recover the money that you laid out for this man after his death. Don't forget, this is a man that has the means of supporting himself. But for whatever reason, he's an extreme miser, as we said. He's willing to take your money. Give him money. And as far as compensation, you'll get compensation after he dies. How do we know that? Talmud Lomer, Tavitenu Mikol Mokom. The need to support someone to extend charity is extended even to circumstances like that. The Gemara asks, Reb Shimon D'Amar, Yesh Lo, V'Eino Rotzi L'Sparnes, Ein Nizkokin Lo. A person like that, who has his own funds, and he doesn't want to support himself from his own funds, he wants to be on the take. Ein Nizkokin, we don't deal with him. So then, Tavitenu Lomali, what does the double expression communicate? Like we answered before, Dibro Torah Kaloshen B'nei Adam. The Torah doubles its expression like people double expressions from time to time in their normal course of speech. The Mishnah taught, Hayabotel Min HaSela, a person, in order to return a lost item, might have had to forego his own income of a Sela. A Sela is a level of a denomination of currency that he'll have to pass up on a Sela in order to return someone's lost item. Lo yomar lo, the person returning the item cannot say to the owner, Tain li Sela, pay me the seller that I would have earned had I not gotten involved with your item. The Mishnah said, all that he can expect to receive as payment is payment like a worker. Tana, noisein lo ischaroi kepoel botel. And here we're just going to translate for a moment before we get involved with explanation. The Mishnah term of pay him like a worker, it means pay him like a worker who is unemployed. Poel botel, a worker who is not doing his work, is not involved in his work. My kepoel botel, what does that expression mean? What do you mean, pay him like a worker that's not employed? Omer Abaye, kepoel botel shel oisa melacha de botel mina. The Rashi explains. Let's learn the Rashi together. My kepoel botel. The Rashi that we're looking at is around 10-12 lines up from the end. He says, what do you mean in the Braisa when you say pay him like a person that's not occupied? Hello, ain't no bottle, meaning pay him like he's unoccupied. He is occupied. Hello, ain't no bottle, shere toreach behashavosa. He's troubling himself. He's putting himself out to return the item. Umas nisin toni noisin lo kishur shigirtse poyo litoil lisrapois mi malocha veleshev botel. And the Mishnah is teaching us that you'll pay him the amount that a worker would take for sitting out his work period. And Rashi goes on, kepoel poto shalos malocha de boto mina. Here we'll get into more clear explanation. How much can this person demand? Once again, we're talking about a person that we know he had an income of, for during the period of time, the amount of time that he was involved with returning the lost item, had he continued on his own work, he would have made a sella. We're saying he's not entitled to receive a full sella. Rashi explains, how much do you pay? Kama odom roitze litoil? How much would a person be willing to take? V'lifchois mischaroi, to take a little less than his standard wage. Libotel mi malocha zu kveda, shu oisek ba, v'lasek b'malocha kala kazu. For argument purposes, for illustration purposes here, the person who was making a sella, he was making a sella by working strenuously through a high level of exertion. He was able to make a sella. The efforts needed to return the lost item were less than he ordinarily would invest in his regular form of employment. How much would a person take to work less than he does ordinarily, and to take less for doing something of a lighter nature? Kazoo. Hakol lefi kevod hamalacha v'ribui schar. Wages are determined by amount of strain, strenuousness plus a level of income. Yesh malacha shetorcha kal uschara rav ochilof. There are forms of malacha, forms of income, where there's little effort needed and you make a lot of money. And there are forms of income where you make a lot of effort and have little income. So each case has to be evaluated on its own. So when we have when the Mishnah teaches that the one returning the item cannot demand the seller, but rather he gets paid like a worker, it means how much would this guy take? How much less would this guy take for involving himself with returning that in which involves less strain than continuing with his own work, which involved a lot of effort? So that's the amount the person returning the item can demand. We continue in the Gemara. Im yesh shom beisdin masnim b'fneim. If a court is there, a person can stipulate that he will return the item only if he can get full compensation, as we saw in the Mishnah. The Gemara doesn't deal with that particular point, but features a story, and you'll see how the story relates to the issue of presence of court. Isur v'Rav Safra. Isur is the name of a person. Isur and Rav Safra. Ovid Isko Bahadi Hadodi. They had been involved in a partnership. Also Rav Safra Polagle below Daite di Isur Ba'api Beitre. They had amassed a certain amount of merchandise, of goods, and Rav Safra wanted to disband the partnership, so he did so. He divided the goods without Isur's awareness. I just want to emphasize the point that Rashi makes here. We're not dealing with the division of cash. That's straightforward. If you have two equal partners in cash, you just divide the cash 50-50. Here we're dealing with the division of goods that require assessment in order to know how much each party gets. So Rav Safra went ahead with this. He he made a division. Isur was not there, but he did so in the presence of two. We'll call them two witnesses. Also, lekamei de Rabo Baravuna. This issue came to Rabo's attention. Omarle, Rabo said, Zeal, I see Tlosa de Palgis Kamayu. Bring forward three people in whose presence you did the division. Inami, we continue at the top of the Aflamid base. Tre Migotlasa, or bring two people who were part of a group of three, and they can testify that we too were with another person when the assessment was made and the division concluded by Rav Safra. V'inami, another option, Rabo says, is Tre Sadi, bring two witnesses to Palgis Bapi Beitlasa, that you did the division in the presence of three. Amalei Menolocha, Rav Safra asks, Rabbi, where do you get this from? Where is this insistence on three? Amalei, Rabbi says, Disnan, we had in our Mishnah, it said, Im yesh shom beisdin, masne b'fneim. If there is a court, and a standard court is three, then the finder can make his stipulation and say, I will return the article only if you guarantee me full compensation for the work that I am temporarily not performing in order to return this lost item. And the Mishnah said, if there's a basin and they grant him his request, so good, he goes ahead and returns the lost item and will be able to get full compensation. Ain Shom Basin Bifnami Miyasna, if there's no court there. Well, in front of whom can he stipulate his conditions? Shalokarim, there is no one, so he doesn't have to return the lost article because otherwise he would be suffering such a great loss. So his own income, his own needs come first. We see from here that the ability to grant financial rights to someone is dependent on a beisdin, and without three, that power doesn't exist. Omar Lay, Rav Safra responds. He says, "Mi domi, how does that compare? How can you compare that case of the Hashavas Aveda and insistence on full salary to my case?" In that case, there was an issue of mapik is to take away money from the owner of the item, who's going to have to pay the guy who's returning it according to his demands. So there, the case of the Mishnah involved removal of money from one and giving it to someone else. Oh, for transferal of money, Bohinot Beis Din, you need a court for that. Based on the power, the rule known as Hefker Beis Din Hefker, that which the court declares unowned by one and hence owned by someone else, that they can do. Aval Hacha, in the case of dividing a partnership, Didi Shakli, I was taking, let us say, half, which represented my share. I was taking my own stuff. I wasn't taking someone else's stuff. Gilui milso biamu, that the division was done fairly is merely a matter of simple revelation. Betray sagulate, to reveal that I did a fair division. Two would be enough. Two would testify that I did a proper division. Teda disnan, and to prove my point, you have a Mishnah that says almona moicheres shelo b'fnei Beis Din, and an almona, a widow who there is due to her the ksuba payment as a result of her becoming a widow. She has a right to collect the ksuba, and in order to collect the ksuba, I should be more accurate in this case. Rashi says the almona was being supported by the property of her husband's children, her husband's orphans. She can sell his property for her support, and she can do so even without the presence of Beis Din. So that you see, financial distribution, financial arrangements, in this case money that is due to her anyway, happening even without the presence of Beis Din. Rashi adds, as long as two can testify that she didn't sell off her husband's properties too cheaply. So Rav Safra maintains his position that I don't need to bring three to reveal that I did the division based on their instructions. Omar le Abaye. So Abaye says to Rav Safra, "V'lav mi itmar Allah, Omar Rav Yosef bar Menuhin Omar Rav Nachman, concerning your very basis, the case of Almona Melcheres Shelo B'fnei Beis Din, concerning that very case, was it not taught by Rav Nachman, Almona Eino Tzricha Beis Din Shel Mumchin? She doesn't need the approval of a court of experts, Aval Tzricha Beis Din Shel Het Yotos. But there is nevertheless a requirement of three commoners. But the requirement of three still remains." And even in cases that you are, let's say, taking that which is rightfully yours, in order for us to be, confident that the financial arrangement was done properly, it has to be done with the approval of three. Hence, your division of the disbanding of the partnership and dividing of the goods without three is unjustified, and you have to rectify the situation. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.